Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Joseph Lamb. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Jessica, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Top 10 IBM WebSphere MQ, WVI, and WICS Problems, and how to isolate them with IBM OmegaMind. Today's presenter is Barry Lemkin. Barry Lemkin has more than 25 years of experience in the computer industry. He has worked as an application programmer, MVS systems programmer, project manager, and technical support manager before joining Kendo Corporation, where he worked for 10 years before the company was acquired by IBM. Most recently, he has been heavily involved with a number of IBM's middleware products, MQ Message Broker, WebSphere, and SOA. Barry holds a number of IBM certifications, WebSphere MQ Specialist, Developer and Expert, as well as MQ Message Broker Specialist. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Barry.
Morning, everybody. This is interesting. I'm going to talk a little bit about IBM Tivoli and Megamon XE for messaging and how it can be used to analyze a number of problems that we find in the field around MQ and Broker and other things at this point in time. So going to slide two. Some of the top 10 things that we've seen and things we need to isolate are would be like MQ channels down, queues filling up, messages showing up in the dead letter queue. Talk a little bit about how we isolate different information between ZOS and distributed platforms. If you have a problem with an MQ configuration, how we can correct that pretty quickly. And restoring your last MQ configuration. Also, is the slow performance due to MQ or is it something else? And if there are any problems connecting your broker's queue manager, as well as if there are any problems with message flows going across the broker. Going to slide three. This is the OmegaMon XE for messaging interface. All the OmegaMons and the ITM products are now using something called the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. Some people may in the field may have heard of it, the CandleNet portal prior to the acquisition by IBM. It's a Java interface, and what you get with each one of the agents that report in, here we're looking at the MQ agents, is a number of reports that are related to a number of workspaces that in turn give you hundreds of metrics around each of the products. This one here we're looking at MQ, and this is where we'll probably focus most of the conference today, looking at the metrics around MQ and how to analyze those issues. Next slide. Okay, so one of the issues, one of the major issues with MQ is connecting queue managers together through channels. So you want to know if your channels are up and running. If they are up and running, are they transmitting enough data across those channels? How many bytes of data is going across? Are they configured properly? What's the performance, and how do they impact your clients, the people that are connected through those channels? Next slide. This is the report that shows channel performance. One thing you'll find consistent throughout the portal is that, for the most part, at the bottom, you see channel performance is all the metrics. Every one of those columns is a metric around that channel performance report. The first column has the channel name and then the type of channel, whether it be a sender or a receiver channel, what the connection type is and what the connection name is, and whether the channel is active or inactive. And you can highlight these metrics very easily in the portal so you can identify problems like channel stop, and in the couple columns over, transmit queue depth, whether there's any messages in transmit queue. We'll show you that a little bit further on. Also on the upper right-hand side is the views that where we're charting some of those metrics. One at the top is just charting all the different channels and what types they are, whether they're active or inactive. And the second view down, which says transmit rates, is just charting the number of kilobytes going across that specific channel. That's system.admin.servercon. So going to the next slide. This one here, if you look at this one, it's the same report. But now what's key and interesting is that down in the bottom window, you see two metrics are highlighted in blue, highlighted as stop. Basically, we did that with the properties values of that channel table. And so now we can immediately identify that two of the channels have stopped. They're highlighted in blue. Was actually a personal decision because that was a change that I made to the product. That doesn't come out of the box, so I just modified the properties highlighted in blue or informational if the channel has stopped. So it's just informational because there is no messages to go in that channel or again, trying to go down that channel at this point in time, but because the transmit queue is empty. So the higher in blue is just informational. It's just interesting from a philosophical standpoint. Going to the next slide, slide seven. So now on slide seven, a couple of things have happened. Looking at the report at the bottom, you'll see that one of those channels is now highlighted in red. It's highlighted as red is stopped, but also the column where the transmit queue depth is, is highlighted as well. To the right is 100. There's 100 messages in the transmit queue, and the channel is stopped. So now there's probably a more interest to you, because if there's messages in the transmit queue, the channel should be running for the most part. There should probably be very few reasons why the channel would not be running unless you're trying to diagnose a problem. So you might want to highlight in red. That's just for identification in the report. If you look up in the left-hand side column, you'll see that's the navigator tree. There are now red icons in the tree, and as we flew over one of the red icons, one of the alerts, possibly the situation that caused an alert to fire, is shows highlighted and shows says MemQ demo underscore channel not run XMQ greater than zero. So that's pretty clear. So that immediately you're able to see, without even going to the channel report, by just looking through the highlighting or flying over the navigator tree, that you have messages in the transmit queue and the channel's not running. Pretty clear what you need to do at this point in time, I would think. But if you look to the left-hand side of that pop-up that's in the navigator tree, there's a little link there. If we click on that link, we go to the next slide, and it brings us to the event window to give us a little bit more analysis about what was going on with that channel. The navigator tree is still rendered to you on the left-hand side, so you can go anywhere you want in the product. And then in the upper right-hand view, it says that is the initial situation or initial events. That's what caused the situation to go true. That's what caused the alert to go true. The next view down is the current situation values, and that basically says what it is right now. So you could be looking at a issue, channel stopped, and maybe the channel got running again. So that it would have the channel stopped in the upper right-hand view, but in the second view down, it would be the channel would be running at that point in time. So you see that the situation has resolved itself, and you don't have to continue on to work the problem. But in this case, it's still stopped. There are still 100 messages in the transmit queue, so we need to do something further. In the lower right-hand corner is what we call our expert advice. The expert advice is based on whoever happened to build this situation or this alert. If it was product provided, it would come out of the box, but here, this is one that I built myself. So in that window, I've said that there are messages in the transmit queue, and the associated channel is not running. Try starting the channel with the take action command. So to the left side view, the lower left-hand corner, there's a take action box. So if we go to the next slide, here we pull down the take action to try to start the channel. And that in turn popped, we selected take action to start the channel, and that popped another window asking us to give the name of the channel. Now that's pretty good. The problem with MQ is that they can be in upper and lower case, depending on what platform we're talking about as far as the channel. And there's a good opportunity here to have some typos and get the channel wrong a couple, three times before you actually get the channel running. So there's a better way to do this. So if we go to the next slide.
As a reminder, we're actually now moving on to slide number 10.
Okay, so on slide 10, what we have done is in the upper right-hand view, we actually right-clicked, and that gave us a selection to take action from there, from the row where the channel name was. The channel name is rendered to us in the current situation values. And there we did a take action to back the channel. And that in turn rendered the precise name of the channel because we used symbolic variables in the take action command. So the symbolic variables in the take action command allowed us to fill that in automatically, avoid the possibility of any errors with a typo or keying in, whatever the case may be. It also highlighted below it which queue manager we want to take this action on because we are looking at queue manager 1. It highlighted queue manager 1 in the lower box. And now all we need to do is press on the OK button at the bottom of that take action window. So if we go on to slide 11 now. In slide 11, the pop-up box after issuing the command says the MQ command was successful. Basically, it issued a command to do the channel start, and presumably the channel will keep on going. Will start going anyway, and the messages will flow. So now if we go on to slide 12. In slide 12, we can now see in the tree that the red icons have now disappeared because the channel is running, but now the alerts have moved on to the other queue manager. The original problem was on queue manager 1 with the transmit queue going to queue manager 2. The messages were backing up because the channel was not connected between queue manager 1 and queue manager 2. If you look in the lower box, they're still looking at the channel report. If you look in the lower box, you can see that we now have one channel that was stopped in red is now running. And the other channel, which you're not concerned about, is still in blue, but the other channel is running. So we have the channel running, but now when you fly over any of the alerts in the navigator tree, you can see that we have other alerts, but they're on a different queue manager. Now we have three alerts that are popped. One says MQ, demo, QDEP greater than 10. and that's on Queue Manager 2, not Queue Manager 1 any longer. We also have messages in the dead letter queue on Queue Manager 2, and we have a queue not being read, so basically a queue that's being filled up but not getting read in an adequate amount of time or whatever period of time we set for that. So let's go on to slide 13. So now we've got messages in the dead letter queue. You might want to know, you really would not know if any messages show up in the dead letter queue, and that's what we showed you there. How long has the message been there would be of interest. If it's been there for a couple months, that might be more particularly interesting than the one that just showed up. What messages are there? Why did the message show up there? You might want to look at the messages. You might want to delete a message that may be a problem so you can go ahead and handle the other messages. And you may want to requeue that message back to the original queue or maybe some other queue for holding or analysis at a later date. We'll go to slide 14. And in here, what we've done is on that alert that we saw a couple of slides ago where it said messages in the dead letter queue, we clicked on that alert. And that brought us to another event workspace. In the upper right-hand side, it says six messages in the dead letter queue, and the queue manager is active. And it's highlighted in yellow because we decided that with dead letter queues were a warning situation, not a critical situation. That's up to you. In the second view down, you'll see that's a different depth. The initial situation that caused us to fire was six messages in the dead letter queue. But in the second window, the current situation values, there are 10 messages. So the things have changed. One thing caused the fire, six messages in the dead letter queue. But now there are more messages in the dead letter queue, 10. If you recall, initially we had 100 messages in the transmit queue, and there are now 10 messages in the dead letter queue. So presumably we're going to find a queue that has only 90 messages on it, being the difference in that high-level map between 100 and 10. Also, if you look in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see that the expert device is just a little bit formatted slightly differently. It's formatted with HTML and gives you a little bit more advice about dead letters and why it's there and things of that nature. Basically, it's HTML because it was product provided, and I'm not being an HTML programmer. When I wrote my situation, I just did it in free-form text. You still have to take action if that's what you want there. But another thing you want to notice is that in the upper left-hand corner where the navigation tree is, all the situations fire underneath the report or the workspace that contains the more robust metrics about that situation. So if we want to find out more information about a situation, we would simply navigate up the tree to the report above it. So now we're going to go on to slide 15, and now we've clicked on the dead letter queue report. The dead letter queue workspace is showing those 10 messages that are in the dead letter queue. Basically, the fourth column over says message code, and the message code, we have translated that from a 2053 queue full. And so now, you don't have to go look up the return code of 2053. We're telling you exactly that's a queue full at that point in time. You could, at this point, delete any of those messages in the dead letter queue. You could look at the messages in the dead letter queue. You could look at the content. You could look at the header, or anything else you need to do on your analysis. So let's go on to slide 16. And slide 16, what we've done is we've gone to the queue where those messages were destined for, the demo queue, which is the top one there. And you'll see in the columns over to the right, in the lower left-hand view, that we have a highlighted red percent view full 100. So, again, that letter queue told us that the messages showed up there because the queue was full. We went back to the queue, and we see that it is full. So it's pretty valid there. We have to do something to clear those messages out before we can send the messages back from the dead letter queue. So let's go on to slide 17. So basically what we would have done in that previous slide, in slide 16, is that we would have gone in, we would have deleted one of the messages, and then we would have been able to forward the message back from the dead letter queue to that queue quickly and easily. Here on slide 17, we're looking at log manage performance. So if you're on a ZOS system, in a ZOS system, the queue manager is very DB2-like in the fact that you want to look at log managers and you need to look at buffer pools and page sets. So when the MQ agent is running on a ZOS queue manager, we will provide you with log manage performance statistics to tell you if you're having any reads or writes issues, any active or delayed reads or writes, which could stall your queue manager and may cause you a performance issue on ZOS. Next slide, please, slide 18. Also, as on ZOS, it has buffer pool statistics, something that's not on a distributed queue manager. You need to know how those buffer pools are tuned, which messages are contained, are you using your buffer pools properly, are they filling up, and how are they mapped back to your page sets that contain those buffer pools. So we go to slide 19. Slide 19 is the page set statistics. Again, the ZOS only. but it helps you as far as tuning performance on a ZOS queue manager. You can see those page sets, and we map the page sets, how the page sets are being used, what the allocated data page is, what the percent of use of the page sets, which are persistent, which are not, and how they map back to those buffer pools. So you get all the full picture between buffer pools and page sets here. Going on to slide 20. So that's all MQ monitoring. That part of the product is just about MQ monitoring. Here, as well as monitoring, you need to be able to configure your object. So with the Megamon XP for messaging, we give you a configuration piece that's included, and we use the same portal. Everything comes to that same pane of glass. So whether it's monitoring or configuration, you're using it in the same pane of glass. In this part of the product, what we have done is we have gone out and discovered all the queue managers where the configuration is running, and in turn have populated this tree in the middle of the window that shows all the queue managers that we know about or that we found, and then simply modify or change any of them. You click anywhere on the tree, and it pops a window on the right-hand side that allows you to change any of the attributes, modify them, or even allocate new objects, and then roll that back out to the environment. The beauty of this is that you keep everything in a central database. So everything's kept in a central database. You get to modify or manipulate all your queue managers throughout the enterprise, whether they be on a ZOS platform or a Windows platform or a Unix platform or whatever the case may be. So now you get all your MQ configuration in one place and be able to manage them visually and easily from one central location. And then you can turn around and use that as a recovery in case of a disaster recovery. You happen to lose your queue manager, you have it in the database, you can easily roll it out from that database back out to the environment. Let's go to slide 21, please. Here is just a list of all the things that you could possibly do with this. The one that's highlighted is export, so that if you really wanted to take your MQ configuration objects and put them back into a MQSC script, you can do that by just right-clicking here, and it would export to MQSC format. One of the other formats is XML format, which you export all the objects into an XML file. And then you can turn around and take those XML objects and import them back into another server, another Megamon XC managing server, and then you can turn around and reestablish your configuration in maybe some disaster recovery site where you built this other Megamon XC architecture. Some of the other things available here is a few discrepancies, what's different between what's in the database and what's in the actual environment, and the updates, be able to update the actual environment from the database or update the database from the actual environment. Well, and discover new objects, validate what those objects are in the database. Validation, by the way, does a little bit more than normal MQ validation does. It'll check to see a number of things that are available prior to rolling into production, so that keeps you from having to fall over in the face in production. A couple other things it does, particularly interesting, is the ability to build sort of schedule, so you can schedule the rollout of your objects from, like, Saturday night between midnight Saturday till 7 o'clock in the morning on Sunday when production isn't running. So you can build your database, build your objects, change your configuration, figure out which commands you want to get updated, set the schedule up, and the schedule itself will start to take off on Sunday morning and try to update all the queue managers for you. And in turn, if anything goes wrong or anything goes well, it'll leave a report for you. And if you have a problem, we'll update the monitoring interface to give you an alert maybe that something's gone wrong with the configuration update. So let's go on to slide 22. And in slide 22, configuration window is great and fine if you need it, you know, for normal management, planning well for building your configurations and changes. But if you're in a production down problem or a production isolation problem and you need to fix something on the fly, here I am back in the monitoring interface looking at some queue or some queue manager, and I simply have right-clicked and said I want to configure that queue, and I can go right up and it'll open up the window similar to the configuration window, allow me to make the changes. And the big thing that has changed now is down at the bottom of that little window that popped up, it now says update actual and saved. In the previous window, which you may have not noticed, it just said saved. So basically, when using the configuration interface, you would save your object to the database, and then you would do an update. Here, because we're assuming that you have some kind of a production problem, you're doing your update of your configuration from the monitoring interface, you actually want to save it to the database and update that change right now to keep your production going. So let's go on to the next slide, on slide 23. We're going to start talking now about monitoring message brokers. So to this point, we've talked about monitoring MQ and configuring MQ And now we'll talk about the message broker, which ends up being even more of a black box than MQ itself. MQ being somewhat of a black box, the message broker tends to be more of a black box when we talk about message flows. So going to slide 24. So with the part of Megamon XE, messaging allows you to monitor the message broker and your message flow events. Give you all the performance statistics about the broker, the execution group, the message flow, subflows, and the processing node levels. We'll give you reports about pubs and subs, neighbors, subscriptions, retained publications, ACL entries that the broker is currently working with. And since Message Broker version 5, there's been accounting statistics that are provided, and we'll pick those up for you too if you turn those on. We can also detect whenever there's a broker configuration change and give you operational commands for any of the Message Broker products. Going to slide 25. With the Megamon XC for messaging, we can tell you if there's any average flow, what the average flow time is. This helps to tell you if the message has been elongated. If the message is spending more time on the input queue versus time in the flow, you might be interested to know that the message is starting to take a long time to get through. And it also helps you determine what part of that message is causing the delay. Maybe a database update, maybe a call out to an external service or something. The Megamon XE for messaging allows you to granularly isolate parts of the flow and identify where you may have problems. It also will tell you about average queue time on the input queue. So if the messages are backing up on the input queue, you can see that there are messages that may be spending 2 minutes on the input queue and 30 seconds in the flow. So maybe you need to start another flow of some sort because the messages are backing up and the flow is not handling the queues fast enough. Also, we'll give you the number of messages on the input versus output. Maybe you're having a higher input rate than you expected for this flow. Maybe that's why you need to be having maybe more spawn, more message flows, and more execution groups. Let's go on to slide 26. And in slide 26, here is a workspace that's showing you these flows. In the upper right-hand view, message input rate versus output rate. This is an R&D type flow, but so these bar charts could be, the red one might be higher than the right one, with the input rate is higher than the output rate, and the output rate is slowing down. In the view below that, average queue time versus average flow time. Here you can see messages spending more time on the queue than they are in the flow. It means there's probably a lot of messages coming up to that queue, and the flow has a number of other things to do. So spending less time in the flow than it is on the queue. And that might be of interest to you. Again, all the numbers that are being charted in these two upper right-hand views are rendered for you in the lower bottom view, which is all the numbers involved here, what the execution group is, what the message flow is, whether it started or whatever, with the input rate, etc. All those numbers that are being charted there are all revealed to you down below in the textual format. On to slide 27. Here, just like we had with the MQ agent, we have an alert here of some sort. So we have some components that maybe have not started. It might be interesting to know. Two of these problems, we have the brokers not started, and we have the configuration manager not started. That might be a problem for you if you're trying to run a flow. It definitely would be a problem for you, at least the broker not being started. So here you'd easily just click on one of these and be able to do more analysis, or we could do some take action here. So let's go on to slide 28. And here what we've done is we just right-click on the broker and said take action, start component. And here it's filled in automatically, again, using the symbolic substitution of the name of the component that we right-clicked on the row in the report, and we're going to start the broker. I'm going to go on to slide 29. And on slide 29, we can see that the broker has started. We can see that he's connected to his queue manager, and we can see what the queue manager is, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a good thing. Everything is back to the way it was supposed to be as far as the broker is concerned. Slide 30. So, in essence, we have a Megamon for messaging can be used in development and tests. You can verify your message flows and your subflows. It's good to be able to start a Megamon for messaging, especially when you're in pre-deployment mode with a message flow, to be able to tell profile how those flows are going to operate. If maybe you have some design characteristics that says that the message flow is going to go to DB2 on the mainframe from Monday through Friday from 9 to 5, but off hours it's going to go to some Oracle database on a Unix box. You might want to profile that flow to see what kind of response time you're going to get based on where the flow is going to fail over to, whether it goes to DB2 or whether it goes to Oracle, whether it goes to an external call, etc. These are good numbers to find out in pre-deployment prior to the time you get into production and find that things are not operating as designed. And then to leave those processing nodes in during production and be able to, in turn, characterize if you have problems in the flow and give you some sort of alerts, et cetera. So you can alert you in production and be able to alert you to any situation that needs your attention, to any failing flows at that point in time. So we can go on to slide 31. So if anybody needs any more additional information on these things, one red book on this that's been updated a couple of times, implementing a Megamon XE for messaging, and there's a link for that. It's a very good red book, tells you how to install it, how to run it, and a couple of good pointers on running it and setting up situations in there. And then if we go on to slide 32, we have additional products here. You can go look at the latest trends in WebSphere technology. This includes a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for the WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on the support page points you to webcast and conference information. You can visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assist consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. And the ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products that are of interest to you. So, that went pretty quickly, and if we go to slide 33, we're down to the point of our Q&A, and I'll give it back to Joseph.
Thank you, Barry, for a great presentation. At this point, Jessica, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we have a question from Brian Allison with WorldSpan.
Hi, Brian.
Good morning. Fine, thank you, Barry. Appreciate your presentation. I'm curious if OmegaMon offers anything to help in the diagnosis where transactions have to be rolled back because of long-running units of work.
Well, that may be difficult to the point. Well, it's going to be able to tell you about the UOW on the channel, the last committed UOW, be able to tell you the channel is out of sync at that point in time. But when you're trying to roll back a transaction, basically, you're going to be depending on internal MQ architecture at that point, I think. You're not going to get much out of MQ to be able to do that. You will be able to see what the last committed to UOW was across the channel at that point. MQ should roll back on its own for the most part.
Yeah, the real challenge for us has been that it happens in the middle of the night and we just have no idea which application it was.
MQ could tell you about which application was putting that last message because at least with MQ version 6 and forward, Megamon for messaging will pick up statistics about what application was feeding that queue and which application was feeding what messages to that queue. So you can see application statistics and correlation ID statistics for that queue, and that may be helpful as far as analysis situation if that's what you're looking for.
Yes, it would be. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Abraham Shireen with IBM.
Thank you. That was a good presentation. I know there's another product from Tivoli that monitor MQ and send alerts, and that's a completely different product, or?
I don't think there is another product that monitors MQ and sends alerts rather than Megamon for messaging. What might have been confusing is the fact that the name has changed a couple of times in the last 3 years since IBM has acquired Candle. Initially, it was Candle Command Center for MQ, a Megamon XE for MQ, IBM Tivoli, a Megamon for WebSphere Business Integration, and now a Megamon XE for messaging. So it's changed a few times, but there's only one product, at least in the last 3 years, that monitors MQ itself and sends alerts through the Tivoli Enterprise portal.
Thank you. Well, this product has any future direction for looking at the transactions and where the transaction, like the CICS or DB2, IMS, anything like that, to show where it spends the time?
If we're looking at transactions, we probably want to be starting to look at transactions from a web browser on through MQ and into the mainframe, if that's what we're talking about, CICS, et cetera.
Right.
The actual question is tracking that transaction. IBM does supply a product called ITCAM for response time tracking, and that in turn includes a number of other things, web's response time monitor, looking from an external point. So that can track a number of transactions starting from a web browser backwards, and there is data collectors that can be put on CICS to pick up that transaction as it goes through CICS, et cetera, to give you that whole robust transaction from front to back. Some of the challenges in MQ is the fact that ARM is used heavily through RTT, and MQ is not an ARM application, but that scenario could change quickly here in the near future, and transaction tracking through MQ become a little less complicated at that point.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Min Injuan with Citigroup.
Thank you for the presentation. I've got one question about the configuration feature of Candle. If I use the configuration feature to make a change to MQ objects, which user ID or what user ID will show up in the config event queue?
So when you make a change to the configuration, what the ID that's going to be used is the ID that the configuration agent is running as at this point in time.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of. But is there any way that it will pass the user ID of the person that makes the changes? Because, I mean, everybody's got to log on to the net portal, the Candle net portal, with their TSO user ID.
Yeah, that's an old name, the Candle net portal. That's good. Well, when they log on to the Tivoli Enterprise portal, the new and 2021st century name, we actually have an audit log for anybody that uses the portal, and anybody that makes a change using our configuration tool will be logged. So if you have everybody making changes through the configuration tool using the Megamon XE, there will be a log showing you what they did, what changes they made, or where they what effects they made with the configuration tool.
Okay, so the actual user ID will not be propagated to the config event queue?
No, their user ID will not be propagated. The ID that's current, the way at least the configuration piece, not the monitoring piece, but they're a little bit different in their architecture. The configuration piece would use the ID of the configuration engine it's running at, but there is a complete audit log as to who is making configuration changes. There is also ability to lock out people from being able to use the configuration tool depending on their authority level or pieces of it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
And we have a question from Sam Young with Kaiser Permanente.
Yeah, this is Sam. I want to know, you can use the tool to reroute the dead letter queue back to the queue?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, because I think you're missing some of those files that
no,
that you cannot see, yeah.
because of the format that we're in right now, actually what you could do is when we were looking at the dead letter queue, you could select one or all of those messages in the dead letter queue. You could right-click, and then there is a ability to forward or delete the messages from the dead letter queue. And when you say forward, we pop you another window, which by default is populated with the name of the queue and the queue manager where those messages were originally destined for, but you can change that to any queue that you wanted to, and it would then turn around and use MQ to forward it to some other queue if that's what you wanted to do.
Okay. And I have another question. Is it possible to delete one of the messages in a queue? Let's say you have 50 messages, and they try to run it, and maybe number 10, the messages are bad. They cannot format. They put in the format, and the program cannot handle it, and they always tell us, hey, delete that message, and that message is bad, but the message is in the middle of the queue.
Right, that's a good point, because, in actuality, you can delete any of the messages in the queue. Just basically what we do, we read all the messages into our buffer. You could then turn around and, again, select one or some number of messages in that queue, not being the dead-letter queue at that point, any other queue, and right-click, and then you have the opportunity to delete that message if that's what you wanted to do. That message would get deleted from the middle of the queue at that point, and then the rest of the messages would be processed.
Okay. Yeah, because that would be fine, because we have to export it out and then to a file and then delete that record and then import the message back.
Right, so the tool is very good at helping you to do that. That's, in fact, during one of the demos that I do, I turn around and I, this point where you saw the messages full, saw the queue full, you saw the messages in the dead letter queue, I go back to the original queue and I delete one or two or three of the messages anywhere in the queue, and then I send the messages back from the dead letter queue and everything seems to be fine.
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
And our next question comes from Ahmad Hanawi with Northwestern Mutual.
Hi there. Thanks for the presentation. That was really great.
Thank you.
We currently have OmegaMon here in-house, and we have some really specific questions regarding channel performance.
Mm-hmm.
I know you didn't get into too detail about it. We're aware that, for instance, messages are transmitted across a channel in a batch, whether in terms of a batch size and a batch interval. And we're wondering if there's a metric or if there's a way within OmegaMon to understand when a batch of MQ messages were started and when the messages themselves were committed. We weren't certain if, for instance, OmegaMon was able to provide that information.
So, yes, we show the batch sizes. Messages, as you know, will not render on the opposite side until they are committed.
Excuse me for interrupting.
No problem.
For instance, if we send 500 messages in a single batch, the batch of 50 won't be committed unless that last message is actually sent across the channel, even
right.
though the messages are sent individually. Is there a way for us to determine what batch that a specific message was in and how long it took for that message to commit?
That one message?
Yeah, a specific message.
That would be difficult to tell. We will tell you how fast messages are going across. We'll tell you how many batches have been completed across that,
mm-hmm.
what your message count is, what the current batch is, and what the current message sequence number and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But how long that batch took to commit, I don't think we can give you that number.
Okay. Really, another quick question. With version 6 of MQ, I understand there's a lot of accounting features, MQI statistics, things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Are those all similar to the commands that we'd normally run from the RunMKSC that are just now populated in OmegaMon? Are there any differences between the two?
In MQ version 6, there are additional statistics. And then if you have been using the product, you'd have to make a change to your mq.config file to say statistics, yes, turn on the statistics and bring those in to MQ.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, when you do that, you're going to get a couple other numbers, like time. We do a couple of computing. We're going to give you a compute on time to drain for a queue, time to fill on a queue.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to tell you about what applications are servicing which queues. And what give you message information about the messages by correlation ID, about application statistics and things of that nature that were never available to us before on distributed queue managers. We always be able to grab them on Z, but never on distributed.
Okay. So back to that batch question, we can see when the batch was started, but we can't see when the work was committed. We can only verify.
You can see how many batches. You can sort of back into that to the point to say, okay, here it is, it's 5 o'clock, and 10 batches have been completed.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is now, it's 5:30, and 20 batches are completed. So you know that 10 batches took another 30 minutes to complete the next 10 batches, if you're looking at the numbers historically.
Mm-hmm.
But all the history is in there, and you can collect that history. So you can see how many batches are completed every minute or every hour at that point in time.
Okay.
You can even see what the current batch last unit of work ID is that got committed. You can see what the current message sequence number. There's a lot of numbers there that you can maybe back into it.
Okay.
But as far as really just saying how long that batch took to commit, I don't think I can give you that number.
Sure. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No problem.
And now, Arno, for the questions, I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Lam, for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Barry, for presenting today.
Thank you, Joseph.